Now, in one of the speaking things I saw you in, you stressed that we're in the disclosure process and that it's not a movement yet. What do you think will take it to the next level? Money, obviously, but other than money, what do you think will take the process to become a movement?
Well, there's a catch-22 here. This needed to be a movement long ago, but it didn't become one because it was ghettoized. They managed to ghettoize it.
Yeah.
And the lack of the money certainly is critical. So the ability to create a movement is still significantly hampered. The process is definitely there. The movement's not there. The number one thing to help make a movement happen is money.
Yeah.
The other thing would be a major break in the issue, but the fact is that if there is truly a major break, given how vulnerable this improved embargo is, that disclosure will probably happen before any movement can come together.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying is that it's more likely that disclosure is going to happen before a movement generates. Now that's a problem, and here's the reason. We need a movement. We need a movement. We need a large-scale public engagement of political realities of exit politics. And the sooner the better. Because in the aftermath of disclosure, it's going to be so chaotic, and it's going to be like a, it's going to be a 3-8-ring circus.
Yeah.
It may be hard to get that movement together. If we can get it together now, then we'd have the structures to build on. So it'd be nice if we get a true political movement going. Now, in other words, the expats, they had $1 million and built up a mail list of 1 million Americans, and they were all getting regular updates, and there were pressures being put on by these groups, and maybe another PAC got formed. We had more than one PAC, and whatever. Perhaps a march on Washington, but whatever. If that were to happen, it would be helpful to be a post-disclosure ability to operate and maneuver. But it's going to be tough because it's catch-22. But the thing that would make it most likely would be money, a couple $1 million, and we could probably get a movement possibly put together before disclosure breaks. But if we wait for the breaking event or something really significant happen, and then try to form the movement, my guess is we won't even have it underway before disclosure will happen. And so the movement will have to be put together in the post-disclosure world. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm not saying there won't be a political movement in the post-disclosure world. I think there will be a number of them, actually. But it would be best if we had it now. In other words, remember the suffragette movement, all right? That was a major political movement to get women the right to vote, one of the most important events in human history, modern history. Imagine if there was no movement for the women's right to vote, right? It was just kind of a process, no movement, no demonstrations, no major funding, no nothing. And they had just waited for something to break in the government, or somebody to come out and something unusual to happen, and then, or even waited for women to get the vote, and then they would form a plan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that would be kind of odd, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And the fact is that when the women got the right to vote, all that political activity and all those organizations and all that political process and movement that had occurred before was then translated after the vote was legalized to helping women further empower themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, if they had waited and not created a movement, they might not have gotten the vote until 1930 or 40. Who knows? I mean, another 10, 20 years. So in a way, things are vast backwards, but that's because of the embargo. That's because of the ghettoization.
Yeah.
Women, I mean, they tried to ghettoize women. I mean, they tried to sort of ghettoize women, to create the myth that they were weak or that they were silly or that they were not educated and they couldn't make proper decisions, and picture them as homebodies and so forth. And there was an effort to do that, but it really didn't succeed, partially because women were 50% of the population, and they were married to men. And so, to the extent that men would try to create this ghetto, I think they'd go home and get hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So it just wasn't, they couldn't quite do it. But the concept of the little woman and the stay-at-home wife was still well prevalent into the 50s and 60s in America. And it was an incipient ghettoization process. It was an example of an attempt to ghettoize virtually 50% of the population along certain ideas that were either bogus and or diminishing. But it didn't succeed anything like the ghettoization of the extraterrestrial phenomena activist research efforts. They really succeeded. They succeeded. Like the Nazis didn't succeed in ghettoizing the Jews and other non-Aryans. They ghettoized the hell out of them, and they succeeded very well. I mean, they marginalized them, they separated them, they diminished them, and then they slaughtered them. So, I mean, and the public went along with it. So they succeeded spectacularly there. And, of course, because that kind of activity ultimately is venal and destructive, it ended up bringing about their own destruction. And overall, that's what you expect. The ghettoization of this field will bring about negative consequences for those who did it. It won't be at the level of what happened in Nazi Germany, which was reduced to rubble, but it will reduce a lot of people's legacies to rubble. And there will be counter effects. Hopefully not something that will be worse, more damaging than good. I mean, there needs to be balance and accountability, but sometimes it can go too far.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is why I frequently refer to the reconciliation process in South Africa. There could have been a bloodbath in that transition there, and it could have been all kinds of stuff. It was so many years of awfulness. But they went with reconciliation and reconciliation approach, and I think it clearly improved the prospects for South Africa to become a viable and a fair and just place to live, though it's far from that yet. Reconciliation is the model I use for the post-disclosure world. We need people who, in some cases, to come forward and acknowledge what went on and divulge information in return for our forgiveness. And we need some people to be candid. But we don't really need to go on a historical witch hunt and try to exact revenge on everybody we think acted inappropriately. As bad as the UFO thing was, the management of this issue, the activities of the secret government, what I call the secret empire,
yeah,
in other areas have far exceeded what they did in the UFO area. And so if we're going to play the accountability retribution game, we should start elsewhere and let the UFO ET paradigm change occur with as minimum of that as possible, because we have bigger fish to fry here. We need to get on with the world, and we don't have a lot of time. So I'm not interested in retribution. I'm interested in paradigm change, and let history sort it out. Now, post-disclosure, attempts at, you know, some of these covert black operations, intimidation, murder, things like that, that's just not going to be acceptable.
Yeah.
And say, okay, now I'm just going to go kill a few people that might be a proof of problem. I think anybody that does anything post-disclosure, they need to be hauled out of government, they need to be brought into town square, they need to be convicted, tried, and they can hang them from their ankles, as far as I'm concerned. But for that, for those activities that clearly cross the line, going back to 47, I'm not particularly eager to get too far into the legal and moral accountability factors. They did what they did, and we have the need to move on. So that's a very debatable question, and there are a lot of people out there who would be happy to disagree with me on that. And I'd be happy to debate it publicly. I think it's important, an issue to discuss publicly.
These are sort of like issues facing disclosure, sort of roadblocks. And first of all, I want to ask you about, we sort of touched on this in our conversation a couple of weeks ago, but this one's for the interview. Do you find resistance within ufology to embracing disclosure? And how do you overcome that? Because obviously I've talked to people about disclosure, and a lot of them are, like I said before, they take the tact that, I've been in this for 30 years, and I've heard it every 5 years or so, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, that's a different thing. What you've just discussed or described is skepticism about it happening, but you're talking about resistance to it happening. That was your question, and that's
Well, the point. I mean skepticism.
Well, first of all, there are a number of people in the field that have been active in the field, researcher or activist, who who have the opinion that the suppression of this information was in the best interest of the country. Just there are people outside the field who have given the hypothetical. Do you think it would be best to keep this secret? They would say, yeah.
Yeah.
So just on that basis, they are not supporters of the disclosure of AMP.
Mm-hmm.
Because they still believe this information is too sensitive and too disturbing. So that's understandable. That's a given. There are a certain number of people that are that mindset, and I don't have a problem with that. Art Bell has basically made that case. I mean, he's several times made that case. So there's that. Now I think it's a minority. I think it's definitely a minority, but there are some people of influence in the field that feel that way.
Now, is that frustrating for you? Because, like, you need the help of these people in some cases because they're specialists.
I have so many things to be frustrated about, Tim. It's just one of many, many things. I don't describe too much to that. There are so many barriers. That's just one. And overall, it's not a barrier I particularly want to invest too much time in because I think their positions are, they can support their positions with a certain line of reasoning, and you're not going to change your mind on that. And I kind of think you could. And who knows? They may be right.
Yeah.
Maybe this truth embargo shouldn't end. It may be that when it's all said and done, we have a disclosure event a year later. I'm going, why do we do that? There are no guarantees.
Exactly.
I'm making the best call that I can. I wouldn't be doing this if I hadn't made the call, as everybody else that I work with that are in favor of disclosure. They're making the best call they can. Does that mean that 2 years after disclosure, we all get together at a party somewhere and go, Jesus, I wish we had kept our mouth shut. This is a mess. This is the worst thing. No, that's no guarantee. But you got to make a call. You got to make a decision. I mean, you're either gonna press for it or not, and you hope you're right. There are some people in the field that are very irritated with the exopolitical movement and its evolution since 91. A lot of that is just frustration. They have been in it for a long time, and it's kind of now changed its focus, and their importance is diminishing. They're in the process of sort of sliding into history. They're not happy about that. I don't blame them. They're irritated with this new group that has turned up in the last years to take this new focus elsewhere. They feel like maybe they're being left behind. I try not to do that. I really try to.
Oh yeah, I know.
Acknowledge the people, but there are those that just believe that that's what's going to happen, and so they view us as Johnny Come Latelys, and they're very critical of what we do. And that's human nature. Nothing to do about that. For the rest of the issues and problems that exist in the ghetto, I have the same response. I do not. The principal culprit for all of the problems and travails that exist inside the ghetto of extraterrestrial-related phenomena researchers and activists. Whether it's credibility issues, the quality of the writing, the quality of the books, whatever, I lay all of that in one place. I lay it at the feet of the United States government. They created the embargo. They created the ghetto. They made the money impossible to get. They made it very hard on us. And we're doing the best we can.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to blame somebody, don't blame your fellow researcher. Put the blame where rightly goes, and that's the U.S. government's decision to embargo and disrupt and misinform and undermine and ghettoize this issue. That's the culprit, and that's where we need to focus our attention. Not on each other's failings, but on that issue. You get the embargo, you get the truth embargo, and you'll be surprised how easier it is to be tolerant of other people's efforts and their limitations and so forth.
Yeah. Now, you spoke earlier when we spoke, when we talked earlier, you said you thought that ufology needed to become more proactive, and you had said something about...
become more advocacy-oriented.
Yeah. Yeah.
When that's MUFON needs to do that.
Yeah, that's where I was having my question.
And I've talked to them a little bit, and I'm going to bump them again, but not so far they're not ready to do that. They don't want to do it. I think that if they don't become an advocate organization and bring in a whole bunch of new members based on that, using ARP, AARP is the model, MUFON may disappear altogether. And to the extent possible, any organization out there and any person, they need to become advocates.
Yeah.
But if somebody simply just wants to research sightings and investigate, and or be kind of just an historian type with that and not advocate, I don't condemn them for that.
Oh yeah.
That's a choice they make. There may be reasons that they have to do that. They limit it to that. But whatever, it's okay. But those who can advocate or those who are considering it but haven't done it need to do it.
Yeah. Now, what about the problems with disclosure and educating the American and the world population about the ET issue? I mean, we're on the outside here. We're trying to figure it out ourselves. Obviously, we know UFOs they're not unidentified. They're alien ships.
Yeah, well, some of them are alien ships.
Yeah, some of them are alien ships. Some of them are all kinds of other stuff, prosaic type things. And we're still trying to really wrap our head around, you know, where they're coming from, all that sort of stuff. How do you think we can go about educating the Americans and the world about the ET issue? And this probably speaks to the Alfred Weber decade of contact sort of idea.
Well, first of all, the amount of people in the world that, including the third world, I mean, you got to sort of step away from the third world. I mean, they got just getting up in the morning and being alive in the evening is enough. I mean, they got all kinds of problems. So there's only so much you can do there. And so and I respect the fact that they got big problems and worrying about the cosmologies of this universe is maybe not on the top of the list. So let's focus on the first and second world. First of all, in those worlds, there are people out there that figured this out in the hundreds of millions. They know, right? They don't have I don't have all the details. I mean, I've seen all the documentaries and read the books. The point is that they know that the polls are showing this. The interest is huge in China, big in Japan. Clearly, something's happened in India. Though parts of India are basically third world, but parts of it are not. So the people are aware. I mean, documentaries all over the place. The cable channels, which have penetrated virtually every home in the country. I mean, technically, if you want to watch the documentaries, they're there.
Yeah.
There's a library now. History Channel has a library, A&E, Biography, even National Geographic. The Learning Channel, which is kind of in transition. The library's there, and they occasionally pick up a new one. Every once in a while, they get another one, and they just keep rotating them around. They've been running them for forever.
Yeah.
And now we've seen a network pop one out, ABC. The books are out there. Movies. Ten of the top 30 grossing movies of all time, based on world gross figures, deal with extraterrestrial themes. Extraterrestrials in one form or another. Star Wars, mostly. Star Trek and Contact, also for all this stuff. Oh, E.T., extraterrestrial. Oh, whatever. Ten. One-third deal with extraterrestrials. They know. All right, so it's not so much raising their awareness. It is raising their awareness to the political implications of maintaining the embargo. That's a little different. They know ET. You know, the number of people in the world that know ETs are here in one level or another and either in their own mind is very, very large, more than enough to support a worldwide massive movement. What they haven't registered yet is the political implications of keeping this embargo going. And raising that awareness is getting on the mainstream media, getting on television, getting the attention of governments, and the number one impediment to that is money.
Yeah.
And in fact, we are at the critical point now. Money has to come in. We cannot continue. The pace cannot continue at the previous pace. It must accelerate. We're reaching tipping points in a number of areas. And in order for the pace to increase, we have to have major money, which means we have to have the breakthrough. We have to finally, the veil has got to come off the eyes of some very wealthy Americans who are saying, yeah, this is a huge issue. I get more money than God, so here's $2 million in the embargo. And make sure I get credit, whatever.
Yeah.
America's got thousands of people that could do that. We're the richest nation in the world. I mean, we get millionaires everywhere. And that's true. There's a lot in Europe. There's a lot elsewhere. The wealthy have got a step forward. The foundations are still, what we'll call the philanthropic organization, are still tied up. And it's harder for them to break because they've got boards and histories and everything else. And there's some influence there I think the government may have on them. But individuals, no. I don't think the government's going to go kill anybody that donates money to this because they're famous. But there are no guarantees. But whatever, we need to go get that money. And when we get it, then we can really start taking the process to a level that is appropriate to the issue. So one of my principal jobs now, and I've taken it on, conveniently so because I'm completely broke, is to help make that breakthrough happen, to find that major donor who is well known enough that others will say, okay, if that person's putting some big money in this, I can do the same.
Yeah.
And the money will start coming. And once that comes, I mean, that without any other breakthroughs, once the money starts to happen, the embargo is finished.
So once you get like one or two big names, then things will start rolling.
That's what it takes, one or two big names. The public can come out and say, I believe this is absolutely true. I believe we've got to end this embargo, and I'm putting my money where my mouth is. There's $2 million.
Yeah.
Do your thing. And I'm telling all my friends to do the same thing. What's the government going to do? Go run them over with a truck? No. Nothing. The government knows that too, by the way.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's my role. I've taken it on. I'm doing everything I can to find the meetings, to meet with people who have the power either to do that or the ability to get me in front of people who can. And if I'm successful, I promise you that I will put that money to good use, not on the advocacy of this issue, and will pass a good deal of it on to other organizations and advocates to empower them as well. Won't hesitate. So that's one of my principal, my major project. I have a bunch of other stuff that DRG will be doing because it doesn't cost much. That's being held off, though, because the money's so bad now that it's almost in crisis mode. But the point is that those projects will move forward, that can move forward. But then the major project is getting the funding breakthrough. My Lord.
You know,
for those out there who know that their physical needs will never, ever lack for as long as they live, and their children will be rich, and their grandchildren will be rich, and they've got that kind of money, but want to make a difference in this world, they gotta, given the opportunity, I have to believe that they would realize that being the person that spearheads the political movement, it ends the cover-up of the most important information in the history of all human time. That's an opportunity you don't get very often, right? That's on a little higher scale than getting a library at a university named after you. That you can change history, and they'll be talking about your contributions for 1,000 years or more. Somebody's going to go, wow, that's an opportunity. I want to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, somebody will, and with any luck, I'll be able to help that process happen.
All right. Now, another sort of obstacle that's stepping in the way of disclosure, at least that people tell me, you know, when I hear as I do my research, is something like abductions, cattle mutilation, the darker elements in the peripheral area of the UFO phenomenon, and how the government may not be able to, they may not be able to protect us or control that sort of thing, so they're not going to say anything until, you know, they can reassure us that they can. What are your thoughts on that whole idea?
You mean the government's not able to protect us from
abduction?
Things like 757 airplanes flying into large buildings?
Yeah.
Big shock. Turns out the government's not able to protect the American citizens from everything that's going on in the world. For instance, the government, if you were an American citizen lying on a beach in Thailand a while back, Christmas of last year, the government really wasn't able to protect you from that wall of water that came in. The fact that there are things going on, extraterrestrial related, that they're beyond the power of the government to prevent, to me, should be irrelevant to the truth process. If anything, the fact that there's anything going on the government can't prevent on current status is a clear reason why the status has to change. So for those who, for those farmers out there who don't like having their cattle turn up with their rectums cored out, which tends to reduce their market value, for those contactees who are having experiences which, at least from their point of view, are very unpleasant, and for those farmers or ranchers who are having crop circles cut in their fields and then having 10,000 interested people turn up to trample all over the place looking at them, my statement is this. It's real simple. Unless you can make a better case for another alternative, I believe the best chance for you to not have to deal with that anymore is to end the truth embargo and let all 6 billion people on this planet know the ET presence.
Yeah.
I can make a pretty good case that contact, this kind of surreptitious contact, off-the-record unacknowledged contact, could end post-disclosure. That the problems of continuing this activity on the part of the extraterrestrials, even given their nifty technology, may be simply too great in a world in which all peoples have been presented this information and can take measures, either collectively or individually, to prevent this from happening. I can make a case that there's been a sort of an increase in this stuff in the last few years because they know that. They know that once this thing is self-disclosed by the human race, that they're not going to be able to just grab cattle when they want to and grab people when they want to. So in a way, this dark stuff, I think the best case for ending it is disclosure. Now, somebody wants to make a case to me, no. If we keep it all secret from everybody, no. A couple of very clever diplomats working for the State Department, we'll cut a deal with them and they'll stop doing it. Whatever. I mean, they can make that case if they want to. Of course, they can't, because in order to make that case, they have to acknowledge there's an ET presence, and there is no ET presence.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is nonsensical. It's Lewis Carrollian, it's Orwellian, it's ridiculous.
Okay.
So I don't care what the dark side is. All right. If there is a dark side, I don't care if there's aliens coming here. I don't think if the Borg are coming here to take us and turn us all into Borg. The way I see it is, we got a much better, whatever our chances are, they are better if all 6 billion of us are of the same mind and have the same information about our fate, as opposed to a few middle-aged or even much older males, old paradigm thinking World War II carryovers, or Vietnam War carriers, operating within the bowels of the government and a few defense contractors who are making that decision for the rest of the 6 billion.
Yeah.
That didn't add up for me. I don't like the math there. And I think that nobody else would either if they really knew the facts of the matter. So this whole business about secrecy and embargo serves us best. Nobody's ever made that case to me. They've tried. John Lear tried to make his case. Didn't buy it. Didn't accept it. Art Bell's made his case. Doesn't hold water for me. I just have a different view of the human race. I think we have more abilities. I think we have more capabilities, and certainly we have numbers here, and we can deal with the dark side. But you can't deal with the dark side if your own government tells you there is no dark side. There's nothing there at all. It's like a doctor who knows you have a tumor, several as a matter of fact, and those babies are cooking and they could kill you, but won't tell you.
Yeah.
Right? Says you're fine. There's nothing there. Now, someone make a case for, oh, that's better.
Yeah.
You're going to be in such a good mood because you think you're healthy that your tumors are just going to disappear, right? You're just a happy-go-lucky person, and so you're so positive the tumors just go away. Maybe. Right? And what would you do with a doctor that you went to several times who knew you had, knew you had the tumors and didn't tell you? When you finally find out, it's too late.
So
you're going to have to suppress a desire to go find that doctor and basically put a bullet in his brain.
Yeah.
That's how you'd feel about that doctor. Well, we got the same situation here. We got 6 billion people that are being told something isn't what it is. And if it's good, then we need to get on with the good. If it's bad, then we need to deal with the bad. There is no other option.
Yeah.
And one of the problems in the post-disclosure world is there will be a lot of people that are going to want these people's heads on a stick, on a pike. I will be one who will do my best to dissuade them of that.
Yeah.
And it's not in anybody's best interest to go looking for heads. But, you know,
yeah,
you push this thing long enough, and it may not be dissuadable.
Okay, and what about this last of the sort of obstacles or the arguments against disclosure that I hear, and that's the Pandora's, I've dubbed it this, I guess, in the notes, the Pandora's box effect. I'm sure you've heard this argument where you can't release a little bit of information, they're going to want everything, and then, we don't have answers for some things. This is the government speaking. We don't have answers for some things, so we can't tell them. So, you know, you can't just let a little bit out. So what's your reaction to that argument?
Well, there's two boxes here. I need to separate them. Two Pandora's box. Box A has to do with the full load of information regarding the ET reality. And I'm not worried about that. They're going to come out. They're going to say, we're going to acknowledge the presence of extraterrestrials. We're going to acknowledge the fact that we know it about it. We have dealt with it in the best interest of the nation for national security reasons, and we haven't been told formally for that reason. We're not going to apologize for that. We're going to tell you a lot today. We may even show you some craft, some whatever, but there's a lot we can't tell you yet because it's still national security. And most people are going to be happy with that. Now, the pressure will mount. I mean, there's no question. Most people will be happy, but there'll be plenty of pressure to get more out. And the government will probably be successful in saying, look, not yet. You know, more will come. Be patient, but not yet. We've gotten over the major hurdle here. And so overall, I don't see a big deal there. And I don't think that that's a big issue, too much of a big issue in terms of the final decision. But there's a second box. And that's a little more problematic. Box B. See, unfortunately, the United States government, Republic, the United States under the Constitution, was given a blank check in the early 50s by the people of the country to defeat the Soviet evil empire, whatever it took. And the people inside government took this mandate to heart. And we defeated the Soviet Union, and we did whatever it took. We built up what I call a secret empire, a vast complex of intelligence agencies and classified documents and people and programs. We created a black world, a covert world, an off-black world, and we did a lot of bad things. We went over the top often, and it's coming out slowly but surely. You read a book like Confessions of an Economic Hitman, you get a taste. You read the Christic Institute lawsuits, the shadow government. It's a complete indictment of activities for about a 10-year period there. And, of course, there have been other books, books by researchers and journalists getting into CIA drug running a whole bit. And, of course, the Vietnam War, a lot of other stuff. A whole lot of nasty stuff went on between 1947 and today. And one of the concerns of the government is that if we open up the ET box, people are going to notice out of the box, and they're going to say, we want that open too. And there, things get pretty ugly. Which raises a point, but of course the ethical point is even less defensible. In other words, you know, somebody's going to sit there and say, look, we can't tell the world about extraterrestrials and deal with that new reality because a couple of CIA buddies of mine, you know, assassinated some South American political leader and ran $1 billion worth of cocaine. I mean, but we can't let them, you know, so we're going to keep this other one around. I mean, they got no ethical position at all. But it's definitely a lot of dirt, and a lot of those people are still living. And you're worried about that. Pandora's box, B. My position is this, and I've stated it a number of times, that the Cold War was unique. Nothing like it has ever happened before. Certainly nothing like it. A lot of things were pretty unique and maybe unprecedented in the 20th century, to be fair, but the Cold War was certainly on a scale. It's the most expensive human enterprise of all time. No single enterprise has cost more money than the Cold War. The estimates range between 10 and 20 trillion.
Wow.
And that was the last time I read that estimate. It was like 1998, so $2,006 is probably 25 trillion. Who knows? It's the most expensive human endeavor of all time. And it was nasty. It was ugly. And we truly destroyed civilization, and we may still do. So, it's not surprising that draconian things happen, and huge secret complexes were built, and huge secret empires were created, and people acted badly, and that nasty things were done. So, what we need is reform. We need to recover. In other words, it's like somebody has really bad cancer, and so they have to take draconian measures to cure themselves, and so they do really heavy chemotherapy and radiation treatment, and they kill the cancer. Then they got to recover from the treatment.
Yeah.
And sometimes the treatment, it kills them. Well, we won the Cold War, and we did a lot of things. Now we have to recover from the measures we took to win the Cold War. We need reform. We need to reform the intelligence community. We need to eliminate the black world to a minimum. We need to establish much new lines of authority and activity. We need to give up torture and landmines, a lot of other things. We need to reconstitute the moral authority of the United States and reform the entire military intelligence complex. And I believe that the ET disclosure will begin that process, and that Pandora's box will be open. Box B. However, once again, you know, the American people were perfectly happy to have these things go on. As long as a nuke did not land in their lap, they were happy to do that. They gave the imprimatur and countless ways to the government to do these things. They bear a major responsibility. And so I'm interested in reform, not retribution. I'm not interested in hauling every guy that ever flew a plane full of drugs to the CIA as a cutout or a direct employee. Every person that ever tried to assassinate somebody, every person that toppled the government, drag them out, you know, whip them in public. I'm just not interested in that. I think we need reform and we need to change. But we need to open that box, but to learn and understand so we can properly reform, not to go on the witch hunt and get the retribution that so many want. History is too big for that. The Cold War was too big. And by and large, because of the Cold War, and because of the profoundness of the ET thing, those who try to actually take this to the courts and try to get there, they're going to lose 90% of the time or more. In other words, they're always going to make their case for why it was done. The courts are going to agree with them. So, I mean, it's going to be an enormous waste of time and money.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the stuff that happened in South Africa was awful. I mean, very little it was done by our intelligence employees, direct employees, or cutouts. Was much worse than what the South Africans did. I mean, they did pretty nasty stuff. And overall, the Mandela cemented his legacy by understanding that and supporting the reconciliation process. We have to do the same thing here. This is not small potatoes. This is huge history. If we can just get through this century without a nuke, if we can finally get these nukes taken care of and not have a nuclear exchange, not have a terrorist nuclear event in the United States, if we can not have a major plague induced by bioweapons, if we can just get through that, we're going to be lucky. We got a lot to worry about. Retribution should not be high on the list. Reform should be, though.
Yeah.
Open reform. Not secret internal reform. Like, well, we're going to secretly go down there and... The world needs to know we're reforming. American people are outnumbered 20-1. We can't afford to have a significant portion of the world hating our guts. That's like walking into a gymnasium in a junior high, and there's like 100 kids in the gym class, and 94 of them hate your guts. And you're going to play dodgeball. No, you don't want that. We're outnumbered.
Yeah.
And ultimately, our nukes will not save us. We need to reform, and that reform needs to be completely apparent to the rest of the world who lives in fear of what we might do. And so, Russia's the same way. I mean, plenty of people live in fear of what Russia might do, and let me tell you, there's a lot of problems there. They are not in the process of reform right now. And one of the reasons is we're not in the process of reform. I think Putin's attitude is, look, you're going to play it that way, I can play the same game. So he probably feels empowered to do his stuff, to do his thing. So we're not helping. So that's how I view the Pandora's box theory. It's not simple.
Okay.
It's the kind of thing that, you know, two or three professors from Harvard should get out on the stage and discuss in great length, but of course they can't because they're on, you know, where there is no ET reality. If there was, they'd be teaching. If they believe that, they'd be teaching it. But maybe someday they'll let me come in as a hasty pudding club, and I'll chat this up with some of those fine Harvard students, and we can look at this. But this is a pretty significant issue. I mean, this is a huge question.
Yeah.
Is what are we going to do about the secret empire? Right? What are we going to do about that? And what are we going to do about reforming it?
Exactly.
So, there you go.
Okay, and just one more question here that popped up actually in my head while we were doing the interview here. During, like you said, the disclosure process kind of evolved and started in the early 90s, and so it's been about, let's say, 15 years roughly. In the midst of all that, we had 9/11. How do you think 9/11, what do you think its effect on ufology and the process was? Do you think it...
It set it back.
Definitely
set it back. So I think it was deliberately done to set... Of course not.
No, I wasn't asking that.
but I know that, but I know there are people out there that think that.
Yeah.
Look, there's a lot going on in the world, right? I mean, you can be sitting there in a boardroom somewhere, say in San Francisco, downtown San Francisco, with some big plans, and you got all kinds of stuff, and you've got millions of dollars invested, and you've got people there, and you're planning the next major phase of your huge project, and then an earthquake comes, and the building falls down. Well, I guess your project put on hold in it. Now, there is a connection, though, between those events and past activities on the part of nations. There's a connection between former policy of the U.S. and those events. So it is tied together in that sense.
Yeah.
But the fact is, there's always something happening, and they always are able to use that excuse. There's always going to be some war somewhere. In fact, I have this way I put it is this. It seems like every time somebody gets some momentum going for something for an approach or a project that will improve our situation on this planet, more justice, more peace, more this, more that, and less violence, somebody blows something up.
Yeah.
Or somebody shoots somebody. I mean, it's and whether they blow up a building or five buildings or sink a ship or assassinate, it's always somebody. So you're always going to have that excuse. Oh, I get to put this off. We got to deal with that. We got to deal with this. Got to do that. Hell with that. It's ridiculous. Of course, there's always something going on. There's got to be something going on. You're either effectuating good policy or you're not. You're either telling the truth or you're not. And whether buildings are falling or not falling, or whether it's terrorism, it doesn't matter. If you create good policies and start telling the truth, those things which keep interfering with your efforts will in fact take care of themselves. Right? It's not wait until everything's right so we can do right. You do right, and that will make things right. So, should the media have backed away from the UFO issue that was emerging there, particularly the disclosure process because of the May 9th press? Of course not, but they did. But they also backed away of tons of other issues, too.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody was pushed off the stage, and this good versus evil thing got going. The war on the improper noun, terrorism with a small t. So, we're not alone there.
Yeah.
And that may happen again. And the message I would like to get out is you can't allow it to stop this process from culminating with a disclosure event. You've got to get on with this. But we'll see. That's a tough message. I mean, it's so easy to use whatever's going on in the world as an excuse for not doing the hard stuff. And that's human nature.
Yeah. All right. Well, what is what's next for you in 2006? Where can people see you speaking? What other kind of stuff you got in the pipeline for people who are listening to the interview and want to find out more?
Nothing formal, Dan. First of all, my speaking engagements are always listed on the web Paradigm Clock, Paradigm Research Group website, ParadigmClock.com, in the PRG site. There's five sites over there. The PRG site is the site that you can usually find my listings, whether it's a conference or whether it's media, whatever. There's conferences on hold pending funding. I have a number of projects where I will be getting underway pretty soon. I've been waiting because the Congress is not in session. Generally, people are still in the first of the year thing.
Yeah.
But within about a week, they're going to start happening. I'll be sending out stuff, whatever. So there will be some projects, some things happening, which I'll have some structure to. I expect to speak at some conferences this year, certainly. I don't know which ones yet.
But so people can just check out ParadigmClock.com to find out where.
Yeah.
Where
go to the conference section there. Just find it. And the conference section there.
Oh, okay. And how can they? I get the mailings from you, the email bulletins. How can someone get on the list for the email bulletins? Because that's important. I'm sure you want people who aren't on the list yet to get on the list. So how do they do that?
Well, it's simple. Just email my principal address and say subscribe. And that's the address has been the same for 10 years, paradigmrg@aol.com.
Okay.
paradigmrg@aol.com.
And just say subscribe, and they'll
subscribe,
and they'll start getting these bulletins.
Or subscribe to the updates, or I want to be on your list, or whatever. But just something to that effect, and that's bingo, they're in.
Okay, yeah.
That's the best way to get in touch with me. All right, and I'll get back to people by phone. Usually, that's the way I like to do it.
Yeah.
XPAC certainly is something I need to re-energize. We're hopefully going to try to do that this year. We'll see. XPAC, of course, it can also be accessed to the main site, paradigmclock.com. They can go to the PAC site and see what its intentions are. Certainly, we welcome all donations.
If people have the money, they should throw some bones your way, because obviously you need it and to help out the cause, right?
Yeah, there's a $5,000 limit. And now $5,000 for some people is a lot of money, but for a lot of people it's nothing.
Yeah.
Now I'm out trying to find $1 million of major money, and that's fine. But in the meantime, look, if there's 10 or 12 people out there who are doing pretty good in their life, were to pop $5,000 each, like the limit contribution, into XPAC, that $60,000 would quickly get it back in the game. I mean, that would very quickly get XPAC at least doing some things that it hasn't been able to do. It would allow it to maybe do some work that might lead to a larger mail list and some other activities. I mean, it would have an immediate impact. It's not a lot, but it would have a significant impact. And it's a question of what people want. I mean, if there's another pack that will help in the truth embargo for ETs, give it there. But there isn't. This X-Pack is the only one. Nobody else is willing to do this. So, there are people I know that have that kind of money, and they have to decide whether that money is well spent in ending this truth embargo and letting the world know about the extraterrestrials, because that's what XPAC does. That's all it does, is ending that embargo one way or another, through any means possible. Same for PRG. PRG is not limited. PRG is a sole proprietorship, not a 501(c), so it has a maximum range of motion. It is not limited in any way by FEC rules. So somebody can give any amount of money to PRG. $5,000 or $500,000, doesn't matter. I do have connections to the foundation, so if someone has a very large donation and they need tax write-off, it can be worked out. So that can be done legally and properly through foundation. So that is covered. I do not have at this point a 501(c) set up. I'm thinking about it. I haven't decided yet. But if I do, I do, and that'll be announced. So these are the kinds of ways that money can come into what I'm doing. And every other organization, the same thing. I mean, a lot of them that are out there doing work are already 501(c)s. They can get write-offs for it. I'm not the only one. And I have links to all these other organizations. You find them on the sites. They all need money. They all need support. So make your call, but do something,
right?
Because if you don't, I'm telling you, there are major powers in this world, and they are going to do what they do. Take population, for instance. This world is overpopulated. I don't care what anybody says. It's too many people. And it's slated to be 9 billion by 2050, which is going to be awful. And even if we get new major energy sources that allow us to maybe create food and water at a higher level, there's still too many people here. The planet cannot sustain it. So, and all those people want to live like Americans eventually. And if they did, the waste and the energy they would consume would truly destroy this environment. We have got to reduce the population. And there's three possibilities. One, we can do it through a global cooperative effort using all of our institutions and our cleverness without coercion, without being unjust, through incentives and birth control and other programs to drop the population growth below replacement, so that we can actually start reducing and cutting back from. So we can do that. It's always been possible. Or we can let nature do it for us. Nature is a powerful force, and given a stress like too many people, it will find a way to deal with it, and it won't be pretty, right? Or, and this is the only other option, people not operating cooperatively, not operating in global fashion, but people operating from the dark recesses of the secret organizations, the highest levels, very small groups of people will do it for us. And that won't be pretty either. Those are the three possibilities.
Yeah.
And we can continue to go blithely along our way, particularly those of us that live fairly comfortably, and say, you know, overpopulation problem, until one day we run up against it full bore. And we won't like it. We're not going to like what's going to happen, or we're going to deal with it. And this is true of that. It's true of the environmental tipping points we're facing, and it's certainly true of the extraterrestrial paradigm change. Either we do it, or it's going to be done for us by people, and it will be for their reasons and their purposes, and we will like it, whatever it is. These are the only choices. So people are going to have to decide whether they're going to get involved, or they're just going to wait and see and hope it all turns out well for them. And for individuals, to individual adults, a lot of them can dismiss it because they just don't care. I can't understand how anybody who has children and likes having children and hopes to have grandchildren could just sit back and say, well, we're just going to let this work out. I'll let a few people take care of it for us. And we're not going to support the activist advocacy to address these issues. I can't understand how they can do it. But so far, that's the case.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there'll be more people willing to join in and do their part to, if they want the answer to the UFO phenomenon, they're going to have to get off their duff and get active, I think, and hopefully more people will. And I think there's a groundswell of people growing, and it's growing every year. So,
you're right.
Steve Bassett, thank you very much for appearing on the show. Like I said in the introduction, I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for the X Conference. So, I mean, if it, you know, when it's all said and done, at least you can take credit for that. You know, I don't know. But
thanks, Tim, and I do take credit for it, and I'm very pleased that it's inspired you, and I know it's inspired some other people, and if we do a third one, all the better.
If you do a third one, I'll be there.
I know you will.
I'll be sure to be down in Washington, and for sure, anyone who's on the East Coast, there's no reason why you shouldn't be attending the X Conference if they have a third one, because it's the perfect location. It's easily accessible for people in New York, Boston, all Philly, Pittsburgh. That whole corridor, it's tremendously accessible. It's not like flying all the way out to California. I mean, I've seen some of these UFO conferences, and I want to go to them, but I can't afford to fly all the way out to California and take time off from my job and all that. Well, the X Conference, you know, you can do this in a weekend and be home and ready for work on Monday. So there's really no excuse not to attend. So hopefully there'll be an X Conference 3, and hopefully I can bring you back on the show as we get closer to the X Conference 3, and we can do a little preview type thing, and hopefully that'll happen. And if not, hopefully we'll be working together anyway in the future. But like I said, if it wasn't for the X Conference, you know, I'm not sure where I'd be as far as my research and my activism in the field, but I know for a fact that I wouldn't be as far along as I am now. So I owe a debt of gratitude for inspiring me to do that, and also I want to thank you for appearing on the show. So thanks a lot, Steven.
You're welcome.
That does it for this week's edition of Been All of America Audio. Super huge thanks to Steve Bassett for sitting down and talking to us for so long. He just had so much to say, and it was just great talking to him for so long, and I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I did. Big thanks, of course, to Leslie, Chiron, and R. Lee of BeenAllOfAmerica.com. They are my support structure. They are the folks who help keep BeenAllOfAmerica.com and Been All of America Audio coming to you every week. Check out their weekly columns, and in turn, check out their websites, and invest yourself into the insanity that is the Been All of America world. Big thanks this week to About.com's paranormal section for throwing a shout-out to Been All of America Audio. Hopefully some of you are listening via About.com. And if so, welcome. Check out the archive. I hope you like it. We've got tons of stuff. We've been doing this for a while now, and hopefully you'll be coming back for more. Speaking of coming back for more, next week it is a massive interview. It is a big one, folks. You got to sit down. If you're not sitting down, please sit down. Because next week, February 25th, 2006, on Been All of America Audio, the father of modern-day cryptozoology, yes, I'm calling him that. I've coined it for this man. Lauren Coleman. It doesn't get any bigger as far as cryptozoology goes. Lauren Coleman is the man. He will finally arrive on Been All of America Audio next week, February 25th, 2006. I am a lifelong pursuer of the Bigfoot. So to have a chance to speak with just the number one investigator in cryptozoology, Lauren Coleman, is a huge thrill for me. You're going to hear questions that are crazy. You're going to hear off-the-wall stuff because I've heard tons of Lauren Coleman, and I wanted to take you to the next level. We were just talking about all kinds of stuff. Plus, wait, yes, there's more. In addition to all that, in addition to our discussion on cryptozoology, Lauren and I also discuss his book, The Copycat Effect, all about the unduly influence of the media on popular culture. We're talking about suicides, suicide clusters, shark attacks, kidnappings, teachers sleeping with their students, all kinds of weird stuff, media fads. We're talking about that. We're talking about the dangerous side of that. Talking about school shootings. Talking about how Lauren balances being probably the most recognizable cryptozoologist in the country with also being an expert on this whole affair that is media influence, suicide clusters, and that sort of stuff, copycat crimes. So we talk about what it's like to be a dual researcher, and that's going to be fascinating. If you haven't heard that yet, this is really killer. That's going to be next week on Banal of America Audio, February 25th, 2006. Be there or be square. You're not going to want to miss this one. And if you're a longtime Banal of America Audio fan and listener, please feel free to throw a little change in the bucket. There's a PayPal button at banalofamerica.com. It's also on the audio page. Click it. Throw some money. I don't need $100. I don't need $200. You know, $5, $10 here and there from somebody out there always helps keep the ship running. If you don't have it, don't spend it, please. I don't want to take food off your table. But if you got it, throw some change in the bucket. That's all I'm asking. Also, please note, at the Banal of America Audio page, we have added, additionally, Friends of BOA Audio. There have been some key websites that have helped us keep this show on the road, helped us develop the audience we have. TheAnomalous.com and DailyGrail.com, chiefly among them. But there's others. Also, this recent About.com mention is great. And you can check out some of the folks who've helped us out along the way at BanalofAmerica.com's audio page. So do check that out. And until you hear from me again next week with the big Lauren Coleman episode, this is Tim Banal signing off.